here on Back on the Field on Wake Up Call, DT.com, your one-stop shop for sports 24/7, anytime you need it, on the Sports DT app, on the Google Play Store and the Apple Store. You can also get it there. Here with Rob Drummond from the NFL, CFL, and the Syracuse Orange, last team to be undefeated and the last team to defeat Penn State.
Correct, you know, and that's still a good feeling to win against Penn State, and not many Orangemen can say that.
Here with Dan Sator, as always, on Dan Sator Broadcast Media. Starting here, Rob, with Syracuse getting back even, lose two on the road, win two at home. How important is it for a team to balance themselves out before going into a conference, especially a conference you don't know that well?
Well, right now it's a new conference for Syracuse, so it's a good thing for them to be 500 going into this conference. You know, they started off a little rough, you know, but they finally found their niche. They found the quarterback that's really going to, you know, take them into the future and take them into the rest of the season. You know, and they're very, very comfortable right now with Terrell Hunt, you know, at the expense of Drew Allen, you know. But Drew can make this team better by going out there and competing and making Terrell better. And if he happens to bypass him, now we have a better starting quarterback. You know what? Having quarterback controversy, having the quarterbacks out there competing and trying to get the starting job is a good thing for a football team. And right now, Syracuse is sitting in a good position.
With a Terrell Hunt-led offense, and now there were moments where Drew Allen has come in and vice versa, where Terrell came in at the end of the Northwestern game. But when Drew Allen has started a game, the team has scored 6 touchdowns. When Terrell Hunt starts a game, the team scores 14 touchdowns. What does it say to you on how quickly Terrell has been able to get started and what he's done? Because it's an entirely different offense where I was looking at the team saying Jared West hasn't stepped up. Then he gets a different quarterback, and all of a sudden he's one of the most comfortable receivers on the field. Chris Clark is another comfortable guy, but he's been able to work with both. So what do you take away from an offense that jump starts immediately after Drew Allen goes out?
You know, for me personally, being a former player myself, it just goes for the simple fact that they feel more comfortable with Terrell Hunt in there. You know, Drew Allen's new to the system. He's a fifth-year senior, but he's from Oklahoma. You know, it's someplace they really don't understand, they really don't know. They've just gotten to know him. You know, and Terrell's been here for a while, you know. And so it's just, familiarity, that's the word, is the best I can use with them being with Terrell Hunt. You know, he just comes out there, he takes control, he's a true leader, and they just follow him, and they seem to perform well a lot more when he's in there. Not that they don't try when Drew Allen's in there, but right now it's just that Terrell Hunt is clicking right now, and that's the best thing for Syracuse University football.
Wagner and Tulane games, 50-plus points. The last time Syracuse did this was a very long time ago when they were able to do back-to-back. It was back in the time of Donovan McNabb in the late 90s that Syracuse was able to put together two 50-plus point performances. Mm-hmm. What does that say about Syracuse? Or is it, and we talked about this before, but is it Wagner and Tulane? Or is it Syracuse that you're scoring 50-plus points? Because when they did it before, they did it against Big East opponents that they had in Rutgers and, I believe, Cincinnati.
I mean, the players don't schedule who's on their schedule. You know, that comes up to the athletic director, you know, in a conference that does things like that nature. So whoever's in front of you, whether it be a Wagner, whether it be a Tulane, whether it be a Alabama, you know, or Oregon, you know, you have to play the team in front of you. The simple fact that Syracuse is a better team and outmatch them is nothing against Syracuse. You have to go out there and do the job at hand, you know. And I said before, Syracuse had to go out there and basically, you know, provide enough leadership as a team and go out there and dominate these teams. And that's what they did. They did what they were supposed to do. No one says anything when Oregon goes out there and beats the team by 70 points or LSU goes out there and beats the team by 70 points. Those teams what? Those teams, because they're ranked in the top, you know, top 10, top 20, they did what they were supposed to do. Well, Syracuse did what it was supposed to do. A lesser opponent, and they beat them up pretty good. That's what they were supposed to do. They did their job. You know, this week's going to be a formidable opponent, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because it's going to be a very, very good game, because right now Syracuse is clicking on all cylinders, and they have all the confidence in the world. And the game is not on the road. It's not in the Meadowlands. You know, it's not in New York. You know, it's not in Clemson. It's not in Death Valley. It's in Syracuse, New York, in the Carrier Dome, and that's a tough place to get a victory.
And you bring that up with Syracuse having that game coming up. They have this bye week period in between. Mm-hmm. How important is it for a team to have a bye week, win, lose, or draw? I mean, let's look at different scenarios. If Syracuse is 0-4 right now, mm-hmm. a bye week means what?
If Syracuse is 0-4 right now, a bye week just means more time to, you know, the laminate, and the simple fact is you're 0-4 and you're struggling right now and trying to find all the things that are wrong. You know, that's what a bye week means when you're 0-4.
4-0 for Syracuse, a bye week means what?
You said 4-0?
4-0.
4-0 means that you're clicking on all cylinders. It just means time for you to get ready. It just means time for you to be able to go out there and hone your skills and understand why you are 4-0 and why you're doing so good.
Is it harmful to a team to have a bye week if they start 4-0? Because like you said, a team can't pick their schedule. But if you are clicking on all cylinders and you have to stop, is that a bad thing?
It's a great thing. Back in 1987, we were 4-0 going into our bye week. You know, we had just beat Missouri. We were 4-0. We had a bye week, and we had Penn State, the national champions the year before, coming up against us. You know what? And the bye week, all the bye week did was allow us to get more game film, more game planning, and get ready for Penn State. We were chomping at the bit when that game finally came. It basically gave us almost 14 days to get our healthy players, get our injured players back, get our healthy players on the field, and just get ready for this game. We had 2 weeks to prepare for a team that we were chomping at the bit to get to, and that's what Syracuse is doing.
In the here and now, Syracuse is 2-2. What does this bye week mean to get back even, to go into the bye week, to know that you're home, to be starting in the ACC, to be going up against a team that is considered a national power, ranked in the top five, with potentially the Heisman Trophy winner and quarterback Taj Boyd? What does this bye week mean with all of that behind it?
This bye week right now gives Syracuse a simple fact of having 2 weeks to prepare for a team that they're hungry for. Right now, they're clicking on all cylinders. And the best thing that could have happened to them was have a bye week coming into this game, because as I said before, this bye week is a game where they don't have to travel. They don't have to go anywhere. They're home. They're in the Carrier Dome. I always say, if you're being a good team, to be a championship team, you have to take care of home first. They know they're not leaving anywhere. They know it's going to be a packed house. It's going to be a national audience crowd. They're playing the Clemson Tigers. At the time, it would be either number two or number three in the country, or for me at a loss, which I doubt. You know, so everything is in their favor. The stars have aligned for Syracuse to put themselves in the best position to go out there and prove they are the Syracuse University Orange. But these two games before, the Tulane game and the Wagner game, were just lead-ups as to their potential. Now they have another week to hone that potential, and then next week, when they come Saturday, they have a chance to go out there and explode and prove to everybody that they are a talented team.
When you see them beat a team like Wagner, you see them beat a team like Tulane, when you have Clemson on the horizon, do you think that this is one of those games that's the shocking reality for Syracuse that, okay, this is the talent we played, with no offense to Wagner, who did win their conference, and to the respect of Tulane, who obviously has good lineage when it comes to Nick Montana and what his father did, and, you know, also with Ryan Grant and Orleans Darkwa and what they've been able to put together. But when you look at Clemson, is this the moment that Syracuse, within this game, is going to learn a little bit more about Syracuse?
Oh, they're definitely going to learn a lot more about Syracuse, because the talent level is going to go through the roof. But as I said before, Syracuse can't worry about Clemson. All they can do is worry about what they do as opponents, you know, because once they go out there, what Clemson does, Clemson's going to do. That's what Clemson practices. What Syracuse does, they can take care of, because that's what they practice. So just go out there and play your game. Play your own game. Don't worry about what they do, and force your will upon them. Like I said before, all any athlete can do is take care of themselves. All I can do is take care of what I do and what my teammates do. I can't worry about what my opponent does, you know, but I'm going to go out there and show you and strike you in the mouth and let you know that this is SU football. That's what we did against the LSUs, the Auburns, the Georgias, the entire SEC, or any other opponent we have played them. Force your will upon another opponent and watch how they crumble eventually.
Looking at another part here, coming off of Syracuse, looking at the NCAA as a whole, this question comes up of paying athletes. Mm-hmm. Should athletes be paid for the game that they play? When you're a student athlete, now you get a free education, that's something that's a known. So anyone who has student loans knows how much money that is, which is a contract. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money that's coming through. So what are your thoughts on the fact of a student athlete getting some type of payment for playing in college, knowing that they already have the education, and also understanding the fact that you don't really have the time to get a job? There's a lot of factors that come in. So what would you do if you were the NCAA right now?
Let me ask you a question first.
All right.
How much money does the NCAA university make off college athletics?
More money than we could probably...
Billions.
Yeah.
Billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Like
more money than you can spend in a lifetime is what I was going to say.
They make billions of dollars off these athletes. Okay, so take these athletes out of the equation. How much money are these colleges and universities getting? Nothing. So you just went from a billion-dollar industry to absolutely zero. So these student-athletes are basically, you may say they're giving them a scholarship. That scholarship is pennies compared to what the college, what the universities and The NCAA are making off of them. I'm not saying sit here and pay these athletes these absorbent amount of money, you know, to play the sport and things of that nature like a pro athlete. But you know what? Just give them basically enough money like a per diem to basically live off. Heck, when we travel away from games, you know, in the pros, you know, they used to give us at least $125, you know, for 2 days, you know, just for per diem, you know, just so we're able to eat.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, student athletes are not allowed to work. You know, so all this extra money to be able to travel back home, this money to, you know, get put gas in your car, the money to do your laundry, the money to, you know, just basically do a few entertainment things, you don't have that money. You're allowed to work in the summer, but during the course of a school year, the NCAA states you as a student athlete are not allowed to work, you know, because you're a student athlete, you know, and that's almost unfair because these kids need money just to survive, just to live. You know, so in saying that, I'd say the NCAA basically should look into that because, unlike the things that's happening with the Johnny Manziels, you know, and all these athletes taking bribes and all these athletes taking certain things from, you know, from boosters and things of that nature, is never going to stop.
When you look at the fact that, and you being a student athlete and understanding that in front of you, you have a contract that you signed with the NCAA that says that you can't work until the summer. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not something that's known to everyone. It's something that I'll admit that I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So your thought is, now I can understand you had a full-time job and going to class,
mm-hmm.
which I know how hard that is. I had a 3.82 out of 4 in my 4 years of college. I know that it's not an easy road, and to do all extracurriculars and all that. When you're playing a sport and you have that as a full-time job as well, it's hard to fit anything else into that. Mm-hmm. I was going to school full-time, and I was broadcasting the games full-time, and that, to me, was two full-time jobs. You're the game that I'm broadcasting. You're the one on the field that's doing the work. When you have that, and you have this rule that you can't work, I can understand that maybe there needs to be some give.
Mm-hmm.
I think the issue that I have is, because the conferences are different and they all have their networks and they all have different types. The SEC has X amount of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
The ACC is just below that. Then you go to maybe the Big 12, Big 10. When you dwindle it all the way down to the lowest conference that's bringing in money, the question becomes, if you're going to give athletes money, which I don't agree to give them a check
mm-hmm.
to play the sport, if you're going to do that, I think you open up a door that you're not going to be able to close, where the SEC is going to get even more help in recruiting, saying, we can give you $1,000 a game when the, you know, American can give you $500. And I think that's an issue.
I think there should be a limit on the amount of athletes should receive either weekly or monthly. You know, it should based off, it should go across the board, whether you're the SEC or whether you're the MAC conference, you know, whether you're the Ivy League, whatever conference it may be, across the board, it should be one set figure for every athlete. You know, it shouldn't go by conference size. It shouldn't go by conference ranking. It shouldn't go by number of, you know, top 10 teams in any conference. It should all be the same, because every athlete across the United States has the same, you know, needs as far as telephone bills, as far as if you're on scholarship, you usually get room and board, you know. But what about gas for your car? You know, what about entertainment if you want to go out for something or a night? You know, some of these student athletes, but some of these regular students at school, they're allowed to work. All they have to be is students. You know, and yes, that's a full-time job, but you have to be a student. I mean, for students, your classes can start at 3 o'clock, so you can work in the morning, you know, or you can start in the morning, you can work in the afternoon. As a student athlete, I mean, I got up every morning at 6 o'clock, and my day wasn't done until about basically almost 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. And that was for 4 years. 4 years. I had no time to work. And then on Saturdays, what? Games were played on Saturdays. And then Sundays, what? You have to come in and watch the film and get your workout in. Where did I have time to go out and work and earn enough money to be able to go out there and just have enough money for extra food or entertainment? There is none for a student athlete. So a little stipend during the week, whether it be $100, just something to get by, just something to take the edge off of where they're going to go out there and do something bad, is all the NCAA needs to do. Because trust me, I mean, you're investigating all these big schools with Johnny Manziel, things of this nature, but every single school in the country is doing it or has some illegal activity, as the NCAA was stated, going on with this player, because it's impossible not to.
If you were to give, and once again, I want to state this because this is something that I've clearly said, I would not pay an athlete
mm-hmm.
to play the sport. I would not pay an athlete to be a student athlete.
Mm-hmm.
If I ever gave a little, compromised mm-hmm. in this conversation, if you and I were the deciding body,
mm-hmm.
and I said, no, I wouldn't pay him, and you said, yeah, we should, if we could come to an agreement that as a student,
mm-hmm.
in understanding that, like you said, you start at 6, you end at 9.
Yeah.
if I can get that through and say, okay, some places, like, you know, you can get book scholarships. They give you money toward books. Mm-hmm. Well, if I got a scholarship toward books, which I had gotten before from a place that I worked at, mm-hmm. if you get that scholarship toward books, and let's say the scholarship's $750, and your books cost $190, mm-hmm. the rest of that was my money. Mm-hmm. So I can understand saying, okay, as a human being, you're coming into my college, and you have this class, and then you have to go to this practice and back to this class. You don't have time physically to get it done. Mm-hmm. Then as a school, we can maybe provide something within your scholarship where you're getting this free education. We can apply something to that. I can understand that for someone to be able to just live off of, but I would not ever be the head coach that says, oh, that was 300 yards in that game. Here you go, Johnny. $1,000. There you are. I couldn't do that.
That's called incentives. And if you think about it, and Coach Matthews always say that, it's not a free education because the university is getting paid. So they're not losing money. They're making a lot of money off the athletes, quite a lot of money.
And that's another thing, is the image of an athlete, the likeness of an athlete, when a video game comes out, when a jersey is sold, mm-hmm. that's something that I say, you know what, if you are John Wallace and the number 44 is in every Syracuse store, he should get paid for that. Because if all that money goes back to the university and then John's trying to scrape things together to find a way to eat because he doesn't have time to do a job, mm-hmm. that's something that I don't think is right. Because as a professional, if your jersey for the Eagles got sold,
yes.
and you didn't make any money, mm-hmm. that's wrong.
Yes, it is wrong.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But if your number 36 jersey for Syracuse got sold and you didn't make any money, that was life. Mm-hmm. That's something I don't agree with.
Yes. I mean, they'll find a way to iron it out. I mean, as I said before, I think the NCAA is just some of their practices. There needs to be somebody to police the NCAA. There really, really does. There need to be someone higher than the NCAA, because they're taking things to a different level and it's getting uglier and uglier. And if they don't realize that these athletes are going out there and getting paid somehow, some way, under the table, Johnny Manziel just happened to get caught because someone, you know, tape recorded the conversation. They're out of their minds. They don't think it's going on all across the country, because I know for a fact it is.
You and I talked about this before. If Johnny Manziel had not won a Heisman Trophy, mm-hmm. if Johnny Manziel had not taken down a team like Alabama, mm-hmm. then Johnny Manziel wouldn't be where he is right now, right. getting in trouble. He would just be another athlete breaking the NCAA rules that are written as of right now. He would just be another guy breaking the rules.
Yep. He's not the average player, and they're going after Johnny Manziel basically for the simple fact that he is Johnny Manziel, you know? He's a big football guy right now. He's basically the face of college football right now because he won the Heisman Trophy. But even Heisman Trophy winners can take extra money if they get a chance to. So that lets you know about the state of affairs as far as college athletics, as far as guys taking money. If Johnny Manziel, the Heisman Trophy winner who has everything to lose by taking money, will do it, what do you think the smaller guy who doesn't have anything to lose is going to do?
If you found a way to put inside a scholarship that there is this cost of living, so to speak, that you're willing to give an athlete weekly or monthly or whatever so that they can buy food or do their laundry or whatnot, if that's something that is approved, do you think that we'll see an end or a huge drop in people that are taking bribes, or is greed?
I think we'll see a drop for the simple thing that kids won't do silly things now. You know, even if you take it to a simple fact of, okay, minimum wage for a 40-hour week, you know. I mean, even that's not enough, but it's still enough for people to live off. So if a college athlete who's got room and board and, you know, given 3 meals a day, blah, blah, you know, has X amount of dollars, extra money to live off of, you know, that'll be something to stop them from doing something silly to lose their scholarship. You know, it's just, at least you have to try something, because if you don't try something, this is going to implode, because it's going to get bad. Because I'm telling you, it's something that's getting worse and worse and worse as years going by. You know, Reggie Bush, you know, Johnny Manziel. It's never going to end. I mean, unless you do something about it.
Are you surprised that there's certain schools that you and I both know
mm-hmm.
that have not been investigated?
It doesn't surprise me. It's just that they seem to be a lot more slicker than these other schools. But I tell you right now, for a fact, every school. In the United States, that has scholarship athlete is doing it. I'm 1,000% correct on that, or 1 million% correct on that, because it's hard not to. It's absolutely impossible not to. You have a booster walk up to you, you know, put money in front of your face. Any college kid, any adolescent between the ages of 18 to 22, 23, 24 is going to take that money, you know, because it's easily accessible and it's there, you know. And it's just that no one ever thinks that they will ever get caught. You know, that's the one key word. No one ever thinks that ever get caught. So it's always going to be until the NCAA looks into it. I mean, and not investigate it, but change the rules, or somehow give these athletes and let them know that they care more about them than just going out there running up touchdowns, you know, and just scoring baskets. It's never going to change.
I'm going to look at it from my perspective. I wasn't a student athlete. I was a student broadcaster. Mm-hmm. I found my ways to get to what I wanted to do and to get experience in college, but I wasn't paid to be. Now, in my case, when my school was Division III basketball, men's and women's, now, if it was D1, they're sending guys in from ESPN. They're sending guys in from different places to run these games. Your Mike Tirico's, your Dick Vitale's, they're coming into the Dome to do the games. Your Jay Billis. But I'm doing the same. I'm doing an NCAA game on a smaller campus, but I never got paid. Now, I can talk to you about this, and I can say, was I an athlete? No. But I was part of that athletic ring, and what I did, the show that I carried that's now in its 11th year, my creation of it, never paid for it. Royalties, never paid for it. Never paid for what I did to help the school to potentially recruit better, to get better equipment that they got, and when they built the new basketball arena, to put in all of the opportunities, even if it's just a jack that they have in the floor, to make it possible for us to have the HD cameras, to run the microphones, to have a better thing. So I made better for the school, never got money for it. I wasn't an athlete, right or wrong, that as a broadcaster with NCAA sports, that I wasn't paid. I think that was wrong if we're talking about this.
You know, if you make the school, the institution, a better institution, if you make the school institution money, you should be, I mean, I'm not saying compensated a lot of money, but it should be acknowledged of, you know, the sacrifice and everything that you're doing for that school or that institution, and you should be able to be rewarded for it, for like in school. And I'm not saying you need to make an endowment or something in your name of that nature, but it's like, you know, they do need to recognize what student-athletes or what students do for the school.
Because to me, and where I'm going with this, is that there are students that are doing things, that are working hard, that are giving themselves a full-time job, that aren't athletes, that are going to look at this, and if an athlete gets money, however the money is given, they're going to say, listen, they got a free education. I'm going to have student loans till I'm 50 years old.
It's not free.
But they're not paying. They're not paying student loans when they get out of college.
They're not. But they're making. But they're making the university millions. We got Syracuse University got paid $16 million when we went to the Sugar Bowl. We didn't see a dime of that. School got $16 million. Players didn't see a dime of that. That's what I'm saying. We make them money.
So when you see that and you look at that and you say, okay, they made $16 million. I don't have to pay for student loans that some people pay until they're 40, 50, 60 years old. Do you look at it as not a wash? Because obviously the money is crazy compared to what you were paying to go to college. If you had paid to go, which you would have paid. But do you kind of look at it like, okay, you know what? All these kids that maybe this kid's got a 4.0, but no athletic ability, and they got to pay off whatever, $100,000.
But I just say $16 million. But then you like we played we played six home games, you know. And then we like my last few years, the dome was filled, the dome was packed, like we were sold out. Account that, account vending, you know, and all the concessions they had upstairs, you know, account the parking and all the money they made from there. Don't even talk about how much they made in television like revenue or from putting our games on TV and things of that nature. So, well over, in my 4 years of Syracuse, we made them an absolute, the class I was with, an absolute fortune. But that's one of the reasons I sit here and say it's like, you know, it wasn't a free education. You know, it wasn't a free education because we had to work our butts off from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock at night every day for 4 years, Saturday and Sundays included. Because Saturday we played a game, and Sunday we still had commitments with football where we had to go down to Manly and be there for about 5-6 hours a day. So it wasn't a walk in the park where we were just a student. Where a student, yes, they can do all the extracurricular activities and things of that nature, but they had time really to wind down. There was never any wind down time But as a student athlete at Syracuse, I'm pretty sure that it's like that across the country. Even during the summers, we were required to be up there during the summers and work out for Syracuse. So most athletes can go home during the summer. Excuse me, most students can go home during the summer and enjoy their summers. We're working out, we're doing things for football, getting ready and everything. So there's never, for 4 years there, they have you. They always say, once you sign an athletic scholarship to go play at a university, they have you for 4 years. And they're not joking. They have you for 4 years.
And that's the thing I think that we can see is that I think, you know, students that aren't student-athletes can get upset if they see more because they see it like, I have to pay for my education. You don't have to pay for it. You have to spend your time with it. But then I can say from my perspective and in the life that I led, I was the guy that got up at 9 o'clock in the morning, did my classes, went and did the games, then was editing after that. I went from 9 a.m. to 3 a.m., 8 a.m. to 1 a.m. So I had maybe a different life than some because I am broadcasting, running a station, putting a show together. But I can look at you and say, was I on the field getting hit? No. But was my body awake as long as yours was? Probably most times. So I can totally get that because that hindered my ability to have a job. Mm-hmm. There were very few opportunities. And when I had those opportunities to go get a job, what do you want to do? Yeah. You want to rest because you're beat.
Yeah.
And maybe you got to study somewhere in there. So I can understand that. And I think you and I can find a similarity in that, even though we had different college life.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think that the NCAA has to be check and balance, obviously, but there has to be some type of way to go about making sure that an athlete has the opportunity to eat,
mm-hmm.
but in the same respect, there can't be... I can't see a check for a game. I can't. I can see it for an education, but I can't see it for a game.
It's just like the NCAA better do something with allowing these athletes to have normal lives, or it's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. Like I said before, the Heisman Trophy winners have been caught taking money or getting apartments and things of that nature. What do you think the average person is doing? The average student athlete is doing? What do you think?
But the thing is, if
Reggie Bush and Johnny Manziel, guys had to give his Heisman back because he took an apartment. I mean,
but if you're not, and if you're someone who didn't win a Heisman,
mm-hmm.
you're like you're saying, if you don't win a Heisman or your team isn't one of the best teams in the country, you can get away with this.
Yes, you can.
You know, and I think that when I look at your side, because I've always said never pay a college athlete,
mm-hmm.
just don't do it, because now it's taken even more away from education, and it's just about this. But the thing that I think is important that we need to state, in any way, if you pay or don't pay an athlete, let's say there is some thing included onto the education where you say, okay, this is the money you're going to have this week to be able to do your laundry, eat food, repair your car if you have to get an oil change. If that's something that is done,
mm-hmm.
I think what needs to be understood with the athlete is the life that you live and the fact that you can't have everything.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And you, even though you can't, even though we're talking about money, and I can definitely understand not paying an athlete, you are connected to that scholarship. And if you don't perform, and you don't provide, and you don't go to practice, and you don't go to the games, and you don't give your full effort, even though you're getting a free education in the sense that you're not paying for it,
mm-hmm.
you are married to that contract.
Okay.
So if you screw up, and you get kicked off the team, now you don't have the education, you don't have this life, you don't have a job because you didn't have time to get one. So I can see all angles in the fact that you are benefiting from the contract,
yes,
but
you're
also ball and chain.
Yes, you are. I mean, you're basically tied to the contract. And as I said, I mean, I stated before, you know, it's a one-year contract. Each year you have to sign a contract. Once you sign a scholarship to go somewhere, it's not for 4 years. It's each year. At the end of the year, you have to sign it again. At the end of the year, you have to sign it again. So at any given time, no one's at that scholarship, they can break it. You're not holding up to your end of that scholarship.
So I think what we've come down to is there has to be a way to
balance
an athlete out.
Correct.
And potentially, maybe this will keep an athlete out of trouble.
Hopefully, but you know what? You never know until you try.
And I think at the end of the day, the one thing that we need to know is personal responsibility rules over everything.
I agree.
So no matter what you or I do in a room and say, hey, athletes, this is what we decided upon, they still have to be the people in this community that are going to do things the right way.
That is correct.
Rob Drummond. Once again, I'm back on the field here with Dan Satora on wakeupcalldt.com and your Sports DT app on the Apple Store and Google Play Store. We'll be talking very soon, and we appreciate you tuning in. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Dan.